Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.
Hello, it's Cheryl Broderson, and I'm with you in studio today. Unfortunately, Robin couldn't be here this week, so I have the privilege of just interviewing my guest, Jamel Meeks, all by myself, which it doesn't matter because I love her and we have such good conversations and I love finding out more about her. And we started this podcast because we kept finding so many women with extraordinary stories of what God had done with ordinary women. And I think one of the problems in today's society is we go, I am so ordinary. And so we think God can't use us, but we find that God uses the ordinary and sometimes even the rejected, the cast-offs. Those are like God's favorite. And so I am so excited to hear your story. So please write in, tell me your story. And who knows, we might just share it one day on this podcast, and that would be so fun. So in part one, Jamel told us a little bit about getting saved at 16. She grew up in the culture of Chicago, in the land of Chicago. For those of you who don't know, it's in the far off country of Illinois. It's on one of the Great Lakes. Is it Lake Michigan?
Yes.
It's on Lake Michigan, which looks like an ocean.
It does.
Don't be fooled. It does not look like a lake.
No.
You can't see the other side. It's scary. She grew up in Chicago, got saved at 16, got baptized the next week, and then met the man that she would spend the rest of her life with. And we just got to the point where they went to college together. And then as soon as she graduated, they got married. And right away, in the ministry for 2 years at one church before James exuberance was a little too much for the Silk Stocking Church. That's a name, a phrase I'm going to remember.
That is it.
And then they started Salem. So I want to know, first of all, how did you start? You know, there are people out there who maybe are called and they're like, how do you start something like this?
So the first thing we did, it was a lot of counsel and a lot of praying and a lot of fasting to know that this was absolutely what God wanted us to do.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Didn't want to start just because, you know, we wanted to be sure.
Right.
So senior pastors that he knew, he was sharing, you know, as we were going through, it was a process for it to happen. So it didn't just happen automatically. So as we were going through the pain of it, I lost a baby.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It was very traumatic and very painful. And so as we were going through that, pastors were talking to us and helping us and shepherding us. And then it was decided that the church is not a building. The church is the people. And if they wanted the building, they could have the building. And the people who wanted to grow with us, we wanted to give them that opportunity, and we knew God was calling us to do that. So we went to our home church, and like 200-300 people came with us from the old church to to our home church. And that afternoon, we birthed Salem out of our home church.
Wow. Okay, now, the name Salem.
Yes, it means peace.
Right, but now what was the inspiration from that?
That's what we wanted.
Yes.
It was so much turmoil. It was so much strife.
I love that.
And so we were creating a place of peace.
Wow.
Where we could worship, learn, grow, disciple, evangelize, in a space of peace.
You know what I love also about that is, you know, it's so apropos for being in Chicago, too.
I mean,
it's like, it's not only the spiritual peace,
it is,
but it's also the peace, you know, to become a refuge in the whole community.
Yeah.
And here's peace.
Yeah.
And if you're craving it, we've got it.
Yes.
And we're promoting it.
Yeah.
And we want it. I love that. Okay, so your first Sunday, where did you meet?
So we met at our old church the first Sunday, and we would baptize there. But we found a little building that was a daycare center during the week. And on Sundays, we converted it to our sanctuary. So it was a small building shaped like a teepee. And it was for us. It was just carved out right there for us. We grew and grew and grew in that space. We were there for 5 years. And we had to move.
Yeah.
So we were searching. We didn't know what to do. And at that time in Chicago, the Catholic church was selling a lot of their buildings.
Wow.
And one that wasn't even on the market yet, he found it. That's a whole nother story. And the exact amount of money that we had saved in the bank was the amount that they wanted for the building.
That is such a God thing.
It is such a God thing.
And what a great confirmation that
Absolutely.
This is something that the Lord has. And I have to say, those Catholic churches are gorgeous.
Oh, my gosh. The building was pristine, beautiful.
Yes.
It's the church, the school, the rectory, and the convent.
No.
The whole thing.
Wow.
It was amazing. We didn't know what to do with that space.
But pretty soon the Lord filled it up.
Oh, he did. It was miraculous. We moved in an area where, you know, it was inner city.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing he did was he met with the gang leaders.
No.
Absolutely.
Here's the church boy.
He is the church boy.
Meeting with the gang leaders.
Absolutely. And he said to them, we want peace.
Yeah, we want Salem,
we're
right?
not going to, you know, we're not here to beat up on you guys or nothing like that. We want to take care of your moms, your little sisters and
so
brothers,
good.
And
mm-hmm.
we want to minister to them and take care. So we did a lot of community things. We had, you know, feeding programs. We had tutoring. We had a lot of things for their grandmothers and things like that. And they never graffitied the church.
Wow.
They never did anything to the church. And many of them came to Christ. We have some that are pastors now.
I love that.
Who came to the Lord.
I love that. Yeah. We had, when we were in England, we had these two girls, and we were a little scared because they started coming to the church, and they were both living with it was called the Black Mafia in a place called Brixton.
Oh.
And the next thing, Brian had to do a funeral for one of the girls. Oh, they were sisters. So their brother committed suicide. And Brian had to do the funeral. And even the priest would not show up for this funeral. He just left the keys for Brian.
Oh, my God.
And Brian did the funeral. And they came to the Lord.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They heard the gospel and they're like, this is what we want. I mean, it was... I love that. I love that when the Lord does that, you know, because it's such a God
amazing.
Story.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it assures us, and it also gives that to the community that they know this is our refuge. You had grandmothers who had been praying for their grandsons.
Oh, yeah.
And their granddaughters who were, you know, out there in the street, and they wanted them to come to Christ and to give them opportunity. He was their age. He preached in gym shoes and jerseys, no suits and no ties.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, come look at this guy. He's like our age, and he's preaching in gym shoes and jerseys. And so that's how we won the community.
Oh, I love that. Now, also, I was thinking, too, like, I want to know, how did he know who the gang leaders were? I mean, how did he network that?
So you just have to, everybody knows.
Okay. And well, that's so Chicago.
That's
there you go.
Chicago. Everybody knows. And what he did is he just put the word out. And then we went, you know, a little door-to-door things.
Mm.
And one of the young men, his grandmother, made him come to the meeting.
I love
He's
that.
This tough guy, you know, doing all this dirt. And his grandmother says, you're going to that church and you're going to meet with this pastor. And he came over and he met. And so that kind of drew the others to come out. And they do this thing where they call dropping your flag. And they were dropping flags every week. The guys were dropping their flags.
Now, what does that mean?
So your flag is who you associated with, what gang you were with.
Okay, yes.
And when you drop your flag, you were disassociating with that gang.
Oh, wow.
So usually that meant you had to take a beat down from everybody.
That's huge.
And it was major.
That's huge. And they did that? To walk with Jesus.
To walk with Jesus. We would go in front of drug houses.
At the cost, yeah.
And pray and sing outside of the drug house. And we were pretty disruptive.
And you were pretty brave. I mean, that's the courage only God can give you.
Oh, we were young.
Yeah.
We could do everything.
And you weren't afraid because you're young.
We were not afraid.
I know that feeling. So then it kept growing. So how long were you at that Catholic
We were there until 2002, mm-hmm. and we built the House of Hope,
ooh,
which is what we wanted to say for the community.
I love that.
This is our house. This is your House of Hope.
I love that. So is that the church that you just retired from?
Yes.
It was the House of Hope.
Yes.
Okay, so now, Jamal, he's doing the ministry. You're beside him. What ministries or opportunities did God begin to open up to you? And how long? Because I know you had children. Mm-hmm. You had four children. And how close are they in age?
I was pregnant the entire decade of the 80s. First baby was 80. The last baby was the last day of 89.
There you go. Uh-huh.
So four kids and a miscarriage between that time. So I was literally diapers and bottles the entire first 10 years.
Yeah. All you can do then is pray.
It was all I could do.
Yeah.
And keep up kind of with him. Because when the church started, we started with absolutely nothing. So I was a secretary. I was
right.
a scheduler.
Yep.
I had to do everything. All the
Type
calls.
The church bulletin.
Everything came to my house.
All right.
So if somebody was sick, somebody needed prayer, all those calls came to my house. So it was pretty hectic. I didn't know what was up and what was down at that time. So I did what had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly, we evolved and the kids got better. We had our own grammar school, so which was right next door.
That's
so we
great.
Took that on.
Yes.
So the kids all went there.
Mm-hmm.
We live next door and we're late every day. But anyway.
Well, with four children.
With four kids.
And getting them dressed.
And even to walk next door was
yeah.
more
and
than
the, all the hair.
Oh,
and all
three
the,
girls.
Yes, that's
yes.
going to do it.
Yes.
And then, you know, I had one daughter, and if I didn't get her ponytail just right, if there was, like, any hair that was loose from it, she would cry. She would, like, fall down and cry. And then I remember she was also the one where you would go, okay, put your shoes on, and you would not see her for 15 minutes. You'd go to get her, and she's still looking at the shoe, like, contemplating it. You know, you're like... No, that needs to go on your foot.
Absolutely.
Now, you know.
Can you just help me?
Yes. I get the late every day. So now that was still at the Catholic Church.
Yes.
So and then you so when did you start like getting involved in ministry? Was it when the last one was in kindergarten or
probably. We started the women's ministries, which I did not want to do.
Right.
I was like, you know, they're coming to church. We have Bible study.
Yeah.
What more could they need? I wasn't really a woman's woman. I didn't grow up with that, you know, so I didn't know what that looked like. And I typically didn't have a lot in common with just talking to women. It was too, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
And so my husband was like, but you need to do this.
Yes.
And my sister-in-law bought me Jill Briscoe's book. I read the book and she talked about the same thing and mm-hmm. not wanting to do it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm convicted.
Yes.
So we started the women's ministries. I absolutely fell in love with it. But prior to that, I did youth work. I love teenage girls.
Yes.
So I did work with the teenage girls.
And you know, what a great start for women's ministry.
It is.
Because you're drawing, now they know you're cool. And
right.
they're coming to the, and that's what we want to do. We want to capture them.
Yes.
At that age.
Absolutely.
And show them, look, there's a, especially if you're in Chicago, California, we want to capture them before the devil.
Absolutely.
You know, his agenda takes a toll on them.
Right. And it's simple. You know, we don't realize that kids wish someone had told them. Kids wish someone had said to them, after they get older, after they get into things, then it's like no one told me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't even believe that. You know, sometimes we church people think that they're at home and the parent is teaching them and showing them scriptures and doing this kind of stuff, praying with them, and it's not happening. And sometimes it's happening, but a kid needs to hear it somewhere else.
Yes, he does.
They don't get everything. Directly from the parent. So that's when the ministry of the church has to step in.
I love that. You know, I always say it takes a church to raise a child.
It does.
You know, forget the village. You
Absolutely.
Never know who the village people are. But a church and just all those voices, because, you know, I was raised in the church and mm-hmm. I feel like the church raised me.
Yeah.
And I still remember every affirming voice
yes.
that spoke over me or spoke into me. Yes. And it means something. And you hold on to that even, you know, through the trying times. Yes. Or, you know, the times that every young woman feels rejected, feels ugly, goes through that time. Mm-hmm. And to have those affirming voices echoing.
Yes.
It just means so much. So you started with the teenage girls, and then you moved into the women's ministry. Did you name your women's ministry? Did it have a name?
Women of Influence.
Oh, perfect. Oh, and that was before influencers.
It was.
So you were, oh my goodness.
I was
goodness.
An influencer before it was
yes,
popular.
Yes,
yes. Yes, I just really thought that women needed to know that we are influencers, whether we think it or not. We influence every space that we enter.
Yes, we do.
And we need to know how
so good.
To do it and how to be intentional in those spaces so that we're influencing in a positive way.
So do you remember the first study you did?
Oh, gosh. What was it? I do not.
Mm-hmm.
I do not.
I don't remember the first one I did. Well, you know what? I remember starting a Bible study in Vista, and there had been about 10 women, but Brian had told the leader, my wife's going to take it over. So I had gone to the church the next day, and there was one woman. And so I gave her the Bible study. I'm like, do you want this, or do you want to just talk? She's like, no, I really need it. So I gave her the Bible study. And then another woman walked in about 20 minutes later. I'm like, you just missed the Bible study. She goes, but I really need it. So I did it again, and I said to the first woman, you know, you don't have to say it. She was like, oh, no, I'd like to hear it again. So I did it twice. And from there, it grew and grew and grew. But, you know, that same thing.
It was a challenge for me to get into that and to learn to be patient with myself.
Yes.
To allow myself to grow. And I always thank the women for allowing me to grow and to, you know, they watched me grow and gave me the grace to grow.
I said the same thing. I went back and thanked the women in Calvary Vista and said, thank you for all the grace.
Yes.
And allowing me the opportunity to grow among you and with you.
And that is the blessing. And so many times, you know, you beat yourself up over this, you beat yourself up over that, and they just go, oh, no, it was great. And you go, oh, thank you.
Like,
and so you're just learning, but programming and doing all those things for women.
Yeah.
It's full time.
It is. And the lunches, which they so appreciate.
They do.
And just the little touches of showing them that they're loved, that they're wanted.
Yes.
That they're accepted.
They're seen.
Yeah, and heard. That's why we always, with our women's Bible studies, we divide up into discussion groups after the Bible study so they can talk.
Yes.
Because women need to talk. That's how we process.
That is right. And men are done.
Yes.
Whistle. They're done. They're like, okay, I really don't want to hear all of that.
That's right. That's
so
right.
You need a space.
You do. Or men say, you've already told me that 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And I said, well, Jesus doesn't care because I've told him like 30. You know?
That's a good one.
He listens to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So now, how long did you do the women's Bible study for?
Oh, I did women until we retired.
Okay. Let's talk about that because you've just retired, and the church was absolutely thriving.
Yep.
Now, did you both feel that tug from the Lord, like it's time? Or was it James, and then it dawned on you, you know, you had to hear it too a little later? Or was it you and then James? Or
so somebody always gets it first.
Yes.
And usually the one who needs it first gets it first because it takes longer to process.
Right.
So I got it first.
Yes.
And
wow.
I started to feel the nudge for a change and for someone else to do at least what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had decided that we were going to find a director of women's ministries, and I was definitely going to step down from that. I knew that. I was totally calm, knew that was going to happen. During the course of the next few months, he started talking more about transition.
Mm.
And he started that cohort.
That's right.
And the first session was on transition.
Yep.
And it started to make sense to him. We had 3 objectives that we knew God had given us just from watching and observing other ministries and things that we had seen. We knew we wanted to give the church a fresh leader while the church was still thriving.
Mm.
We didn't want to step down with the church on life support.
That's so good. So good.
We wanted to finish well, mm-hmm. and we wanted to be well when we finished, so that there was life after. We didn't want to step down there to hospitals.
That's right.
And you know, not being able to do anything. So those things were in our hearts and in our minds. And then the perfect successor was right there at the perfect age. He and his wife are just amazing. And so everything was in order. We just needed to be in order. And so we could not stop what God had already put in order.
That's so amazing. I mean, it's not easy to step away.
It is not.
You know, we're in the process of transitioning. And I know because, well, I actually taught kindergarten years ago and had to give up my class to another teacher because I was pregnant with my third child. And there's a huge gap. But anyway, I remember going in and seeing that she'd written children's names on the board. And it, like, I started crying because I was like, oh, but this one, you know, he just tries to love and he hugs a little too hard and he doesn't know how strong he is. And this one, he's just a little wiggly all the time.
Yeah.
And so I was crying so hard that the other teacher, you know, took me out to like comfort me. And I was saying all this. And that's kind of how it is.
Yes.
When you're giving up a ministry, like, I want you to understand, have patience with this person.
Exactly.
And yet it's like the Lord's got to teach them.
Exactly.
Just like he taught
you.
So what does life look like? Like right now for Pastor James Meeks and Jamel Meeks?
It's crazy.
You know, it's worse than it was.
It's crazy. We took the first 6 months and we just, you know, tried to decompress. And then the next 6 months, he preached everywhere. Whoever asked, he was there. And so we were on the road a lot and he was preaching a lot. So he kind of got to feel needed and wanted again. And that
yes, and he is.
He is. And so we're at the point now, we always knew that our next act, as they call it, the second act.
Don't you love it?
We love mentoring
pastors
and their wives.
Yes.
We love strengthening churches.
Yes.
We love strengthening marriages.
Yes.
Ministry marriages or non-ministry marriages. So we're doing a lot of that. We're going to probably put together some things of our own that we're going to start working through that. But that is definitely our desire, and we want to do that.
And you know what? I was on the marriage panel with you, and there was so much wisdom. And I mean, considering that you have been together for almost 50 years, mm-hmm. and you've been married, what is it, 40?
It'll be 45 December.
45 years. I mean, that's a lot of knowledge. And you know what, you know, as you mentioned before, it's not just Christians.
Yes.
It's non-Christians who are like, wait, how did you do that? How are you still together? How did you, you know, make it over these hard places? And then all your children are walking with the Lord.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that people are like, well, wait, how are all your children walking with the Lord?
Yeah.
And to talk about parenting. And this is what, you know, in a time when the family is, you know, falling apart, to be able to minister like this is great.
Yeah. We had a lot of things that taught us things that happened. We had a lot of pastors' kids that came through our church. They were like, I can't go, and da, 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 I'm struggling, whatever. And we saw that, and we wanted to be sure that we didn't do that to our kids to where they needed to, you know, walk away. So we wanted to try to be intentional that ministry wasn't overwhelming to them.
I know the feeling, yes.
Because it can be.
It can
and
be.
Because I didn't come from that. It was easier for me. I had a different viewpoint because he came and was raised in that. He had more of that traditional whatever, and I was sort of like, that'll be fine.
So, you know, one thing I've loved about this interview, because we're actually out of time, is the fact that God's never finished with you.
No.
And, you know, he started in your teens.
Yep.
He was with you in your 20s. He continued in your 30s, your 40s, and all after that.
Yep.
And even in retirement, as you said, it's maybe the third act for you guys. Because I love the way that he does not waste his servants or people who are submitted to him.
Yeah.
And Jamel, I knew I loved you when we first talked and we bonded in Bicester, which, you know, how many can say that?
Yes.
And thank you so much for being a guest on Women Worth Knowing. And I know that you've inspired our listeners today. And so, again, thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for listening to this episode of Women Worth Knowing.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.